This is LA's home for the Dodgers.
Somehow makes the play.
And you're listening to Off-Season Dodger Talk.
He bobbles it, which falls face first, somehow picks it up, throws behind his back with his face in the dirt, throw to first base to Gonzalez and makes the play.
Call 866-987-2570 and talk to your host, David Massey.
Welcome to Nissan Dodger Talk. David Massey with you until 9 o'clock tonight right here on your home for the Dodgers, AM 570 LA Sports. The Dodgers' first spring training game will be February 25th, heard right here on Dodgers Radio, AM 570 LA Sports at Camelback Ranch against the Chicago White Sox. Dodgers on deck will begin at 11:30 that day, and first pitch will be at noon right here on AM 570 LA Sports. We are on the eve less than 24 hours away from pitchers and catchers reporting to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. The first workout will be on Thursday, and then on Monday will be when the full squad reports to Camelback Ranch, and next Tuesday, a week from today, will be the first full workout with the entire Dodger ball club at Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. And we've got a great show for you tonight to get you set for all of that. Coming up in our next segment at 8:15, we'll check in with Andy McCullough from the LA Times, who is there in Glendale, Arizona, getting ready for pitchers and catchers to report tomorrow. Dave Roberts, Andrew Friedman will address the media there on campus, and also to the players, the pitchers and catchers, plus some of the position players that are there will also report and will be available for comments. So as the week goes on, we will get more and more information. I will be live at Camelback Ranch beginning next Monday and be there for a full month, so you'll have Dodger Talk live from Camelback Ranch when the full squad reports next Monday. And Petros and Money will be reporting on St. Patrick's Day. Shocker, right? They'll be doing a live broadcast when the Dodgers and Chicago Cubs take each other on from the Cactus League and be out there for a listener party on St. Patrick's Day. Don't forget, this is the place for real Dodger Talk. You know, I was driving in this afternoon and I heard the evil four letters say they have the most informed, unfiltered Dodger Talk. What I can tell you is they're all listening to this show right now for their show prep to talk about the Dodgers. So this is the one and only place for real Dodger Talk, AM 570 LA Sports. And I'm sure they're all podcasting this right now. So hi to everybody over there. Thanks for listening. And this is the place for real Dodger Talk. And speaking of real Dodger Talk this week will be Thursday night at 7 o'clock and Friday at 7 o'clock. So the rest of those guys over there can do their show prep and be ready for the next days. This is the place for real Dodger Talk. And I wish Andy McCullough, who's going to be on our show in the next segment, would have been a little bit more aware of Dodger Talk on Friday night, because when we signed off at 8 o'clock, Andy tweeted out maybe a half hour after that Chase Utley is returning to the Dodgers. And I think it's a great sign. It's a great signal to everybody in that clubhouse that Chase Utley will be back for another season. The way these tweets were coming in from the players after they heard the news that the Dodgers would be bringing back Chase Utley, that just shows you how much they care about him and what he meant to the ball club last year. And when Jock Peterson was in studio on Friday, you could really feel that Chase holds a lot of players accountable, especially the young players. And I asked Jock whether or not he ever got nose to nose with Chase Utley, and he said one time, and he didn't want to elaborate on that. So obviously Chase Utley means a lot for the Dodgers, and it's great to have him back. But I don't think this sign was primarily just sentimental, and that kind of brings me to what I feel are the two biggest concerns for the Dodgers going into spring training. I've mentioned Clayton Kershaw's back several times during the offseason. I feel like it's the elephant in the room that nobody really wants to acknowledge when you talk to people with the Dodgers. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, we will have Dodger pitching coach Rick Honeycutt on. He joined us last week, but I thought it was a conversation worth sharing again since this is the eve of pitchers and catchers reporting. And I did ask Honeycutt point blank how concerned he is or if anything is going to be altered with Kershaw's spring training routine, considering he missed 2.5 months with a serious back injury. So it will be interesting to see how things play out in spring training, and more importantly, how things play out in the regular season. I have no doubts when Kershaw says, "I feel great," that he doesn't feel great right now. I think he does feel good, but will he feel good when the spring training routine continues to go? Will they have to kind of protect him from himself a little bit and hold him back a little bit? I think that's one of the interesting questions in spring training. Now, if they do that, do I think the alarm bells and the red flag should go off for him being injured? No. But I do think it shows that the Dodgers are very conscious of keeping him healthy and holding him back a little bit, because like we talk about every year at this time, it's not about spring training games. They don't really matter. It's about the regular season. And I'm pretty confident, as I trust Rick Honeycutt and Dave Roberts are, that Kershaw knows how to get himself ready. He doesn't need any help. He knows his body. He knows how to adjust. And I believe that may be the case this spring training again, where he might be skipped a day as far as bullpen sessions. And what Rick Honeycutt will share with us again is that the World Baseball Classic actually plays in the Dodgers' favor to give Kershaw some needed rest, and not just him, but some of the other pitchers. So that's number one. My other concern is Adrian Gonzalez's neck. Oh, yeah. Remember that? It limited him to have his worst slugging percentage in his career since 2005. He only slugged .435 last year. And by the way, the last time he only slugged in the 400s, .407 in 2005, was when he was barely breaking into the major leagues and only played 43 games. So that is an alarm bell for me, and he dealt with it and managed it. He talked to me about it several times on and off the record that he was dealing with it but wasn't going to come out of the lineup. And somehow, some way, he still managed to have a very productive season. 18 home runs, 90 RBIs, and let's not forget about that great at-bat in Game 1 of the NLCS, where he had that base hit to tie the game against Aroldis Chapman. So he did find a way to manage that neck injury. And you may ask, well, why didn't he have surgery to repair it? Well, it's in a spot where if he did have surgery, not only at this stage of his career could it keep him out for a season, but there's a very good chance if he had surgery on it, it could end his career. It's something where he has to manage it for the remainder of his career, and he's another year older. So I think that's part of the reason why the Dodgers felt like this was the right time to re-sign Chase Utley. Not only for everything that I've mentioned and everybody else has mentioned about his impact on that club, but also, too, it's about insurance. Insurance in case that neck injury becomes unmanageable for Adrian Gonzalez. If it holds him out and puts him on the DL, something that he has never gone on in his career. He's never been on the 15-day DL. And maybe Dave Roberts needs to hold him out for extended period of times to get that, whatever's going on with that neck, get it calmed down. So I don't think it was purely sentimental to have Chase Utley back on this ball club. I think there was a real measured reason why the Dodgers decided to bring him back. And I think one of the major reasons is Adrian Gonzalez's neck. I don't think that was something that was lost on Farhan and Andrew. And we'll see when we get to spring training the condition of that neck, because it was bothering Adrian last spring training. And during spring training, there's a lot more work that goes into a baseball player's routine than there is during the regular season. These guys are there from 7 in the morning lifting weights, hitting in the cage until probably 4 in the afternoon, 2 in the afternoon if you're being, well, I'd say 2 in the afternoon with no games, but if there's games going on, those guys don't leave until 5 o'clock, so that puts a lot more strain on the older players' bodies, and I wouldn't be surprised, too, if Adrian limits himself in the World Baseball Classic for Team Mexico. So it'll be interesting to see how those two things play out during spring training. The way the Dodgers handle Kershaw and him missing 2.5 months with his back, and also how the Dodgers handle Adrian Gonzalez, who's another year older, coming off a season where he had the lowest slugging percentage due to what I believe was his neck injury bothering him the majority of last year. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. When we continue on Nissan Dodger Talk, we will hear from Andy McCullough live in Glendale, Arizona. Ask him his thoughts on Kershaw's back and Gonzalez's neck. And also, at the bottom of the hour, we'll hear from Dodgers pitching coach Rick Honeycutt. We'll share that conversation with you again right here on AM 570 LA Sports, your home for the Dodgers, no place else. Welcome back to Nissan Dodger Talk. David Vassay with you until 9 o'clock tonight, but we are less than 24 hours away from Dodgers pitchers and catchers reporting to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona, and a man that is prepared and ready to be there to watch pitchers play catch. I will not be there until the full squad reports, is Andy McCullough from the LA Times. Andy, I know you're very excited about that.
Yeah, how come I can't get your schedule, man?
I don't know, Andy. You know, life in the radio biz sometimes allows you not to escape pitchers and catchers playing catch.
Yeah, that's good work if you can get it, let me tell you.
But as you know, a lot of people are very excited about the news you broke last week that Chase Utley is coming back to the Dodgers. How significant is that for the Dodgers, not only in the clubhouse, but production-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think Chase Utley can still be a useful player. I mean, you look at how well he hit the first 2 months of last year. He got about 200 plate appearances. Like, he'll probably get about 200 plate appearances for the season this year. He had like an 800 OPS, was playing quality defense. The arm is obviously a little short, but was still useful at second base and was putting together good at-bats from the leadoff spot. You know, he obviously started to fade as the year went on. I mean, he's 38 now, so he's probably not physically built to play every single day the way they asked him to. But I think, on the field, like giving him 150 to 200 at-bats, coming off the bench, giving days off to Logan Forsythe or allowing Forsythe to play first base or third base some days, I think he can still be useful. And then, the clubhouse aspect is something that, I guess can kind of be mocked by, like, the sabermetric folk and all that, and people who don't really buy into that sort of stuff. But, Chase Utley is one of the more beloved veteran players, in baseball for his teammates, at the very least, over the past decade or whatever. And, he was absolutely one of the most important members of that room in terms of the chemistry, in terms of, the way they, did things from day to day, in terms of helping Dave Roberts, get through his first season. Utley was one of the veterans, along with Justin Turner and Adrian Gonzalez, who, had some input with Dave on a fairly regular basis on stuff. And so to bring him back, again, this is the theme of the offseason has been just, putting the band back together, for lack of a non-cliched way to say that they spent $200 million signing all their players. And Utley is like kind of the bow tie on it or whatever. He's like the last bow tie. That's all. Wow, that's not what he is at all.
Like, I'm going to tell him you refer to him as a bow tie.
And he'll say, who?
Andy, the biggest question I have for you, though, is why now? What convinced the Dodgers that they should bring him back at this particular point in time? Maybe, obviously, you want to wait to see what happens and develops if they were able to acquire Dozier or eventually acquire Logan Forsythe. But why last Friday did they make that decision that they wanted to bring him back and not do it sooner?
I would say probably that's when he said yes to taking $2 million to do it.
Good reason.
It's a business, you don't have to get, too sentimental. I mean, it's a business, I'm sure after the way he played and the way he, contributed to the club last year, that's fair, to ask for, but obviously, the Dodgers weren't, really compelled to do that at the start of the offseason, but, you look at the other offers. I mean, they were all, I think, the Cleveland was tied to him, and, they're obviously a really good club. I think the Braves might have been in there. They probably would have been offering some more playing time. He's from LA, the LA area. He went to UCLA. He had obviously a you know, borderline Hall of Fame career with the Phillies, but he probably wanted to be home. I think he lives in the Bay Area still, so wanted to, you know, wanted to be home and wanted to be close to family. And this made sense on a lot of different levels. So it's just, it was probably just the money started to make sense is why it locked into place, you know, just this past week.
Now, we all know how Chase Utley fits in that clubhouse and how those players feel about him in that clubhouse, but how does he fit on the field? Is he going to play a lot of second base, especially since Logan Forsythe seems to be able to handle righties and lefties pretty well? Do you feel like first base is going to be the place he gets some at-bats when he's not playing second base or pinch hitting?
I don't know, David. I hadn't thought about Utley playing first base. He doesn't make a ton of sense there, to be honest. You know, it doesn't make a ton of sense because he's a left-handed stick, so, you know, it wouldn't be a platoon advantage over Gonzalez. You have guys like, you know, possibly Scott Van Slyke, who might be stepping in to get those at bats. So I don't know why you would play Utley at first base, and I don't know why you would ask him to learn a new position. I mean, they tried that with third base last year, and he didn't feel super comfortable out there, and I think, you know, given just sort of, you know, where he's at in his career, asking him to learn a new position is probably a bit much.
The only reason why I bring it up is something that I brought up in the first segment is there's two concerns for me. It's Kershaw's back, and to a certain extent, the same level of concern for Adrian Gonzalez's neck, since he did not have a very high slugging percentage, and he's another year older, and that thing is not going away. Maybe the Dodgers not only had the sentimental side of things signing Utley, but maybe even an insurance left-handed bat to play first base if something pops up with that neck.
Yeah, I mean, that's also, you know, they have Cody Bellinger, who is, you know, is needs to play some at AAA before he can show himself. But Bellinger's obviously the heir apparent to, you know, to Gonzalez. I don't know. I mean, I guess Utley could learn to play first base. I just think it would make more sense probably to do Forsythe or Van Slyke if Gonzalez is out for an extended period, even if you'd be downgrading the defense a little bit. I think in the aggregate, the defense with Utley at second and Forsythe at first is probably better than Forsythe at second and Utley at first.
Andy McCullough from the LA Times is our guest. He's live in Arizona getting ready for Dodgers pitchers and catchers to report tomorrow. You can follow Andy on Twitter at McCullough Times, and that's where you found the news that Chase Utley will be back with the Dodgers for another season. Andy, as far as the pitchers and catchers go, I mentioned the concern about Kershaw's back. From the people you've spoken to, how concerned are the Dodgers that he can stay healthy the entire season?
Well, I mean, I think it's always going to be a concern. You know, with a pitcher, there's always going to be a worry. And I think now there's, you know, a fairly serious back injury that they're going to have to manage. But, you know, they feel somewhat confident that based on how he came back last year and the way he, you know, reconfigured his routine and all these sorts of things to reduce some of the stress on him in between starts, that he'll be able to come back and be himself. You know, he's obviously expressed his confidence, so he'll be able to do that. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a wait and see sort of thing. I mean, it's going to be something that's going to need to be monitored as the year goes on. And I'm sure Kershaw's going to be the opposite of thrilled about that. People are going to be asking about his back all the time, but that's just kind of, you know, what happens when you have a serious injury. And it was a very serious injury. You know, as Andrew Friedman said, after they got knocked out in the playoffs, you know, most players, in their opinion, would not have been able to come back from this. And you know, at least within the time period that Kershaw did, you know, and it took him having a fairly serious setback in order, you know, for him to kind of change his strategy for going about the injury. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be something that's on their mind, but I don't think, you know, they're going to come out and say, like, you know, with Dave Roberts and Andrew Friedman talk tomorrow, they're not going to come out and say, like, we are freaked out about Clayton's back. But he's a pitcher, and pitching is horrible for your body, and he's pitched a lot over his career. So there is a reason to be concerned, and it's not because he's fragile. It's not because, you know, he's damaged goods. It's because he pitches for a living, and he's coming off a significant back injury. So, that you know, it's something that they'll have to keep an eye on, obviously.
Yeah, and they're not going to come out and say they're freaked out, but one thing we will be able to tell is if they kind of hold him back a little bit in spring training. Do you anticipate that happening?
I don't know. With a lot of these things, you know, it's up to Kershaw's call, you know, based on how he feels. That's something that will definitely be addressed tomorrow, I think. You know, if he's going to be, you know, jumping in with both feet the way he normally does, or if he's going to be taking it easy going in, I don't know. I mean, knowing his personality, you would think that he wants to just get back to, you know, the regular schedule and not sort of, you know, be have any training wheels on. And based, you know, like, when he came back, obviously there were some issues with the off-speed stuff. You know, the slider, you know, wasn't moving as much as possible, and he couldn't, you know, command the curveball in the way he had in the past. But, you know, he didn't look physically compromised for the most part. I mean, I think, you know, there was some issues maybe in that first start in Miami where he looked a little ginger. But, you know, in the playoffs, he looked like himself, at least in his delivery. It didn't look like he was in pain. He obviously was in a great deal of discomfort, you know, in between outings. And, you know, but so it's not like his delivery came back totally messed up. And in his mind, you know, the way he's voiced it is he's sort of past it and he's moving forward. But, you know, that's going to be kind of a push-pull, I think, as the year goes on between him and the organization.
Andy McCullough from the LA Times is our guest. And it's funny you bring that up. Obviously, the curveball and the slider were not Kershaw-esque after the back injury. Do you think he thought about reinventing himself or making some tweaks or developing that changeup more during the offseason? Do you anticipate to see anything different from him considering what he went through last year?
You know, that's another good question. I don't know. He doesn't pick up when I call. No, I mean, yeah, that's something worthwhile asking. But, you know, again, you got to think about how his personality is. I don't know if he's going to think I need to reinvent myself. I mean, he came back and, you know, he made what, 4 starts in the postseason, and 2 were like really, really good. One was not great and one was so-so. So it's not like he came back and was just getting his head kicked in every time out. He had some good outings in the regular season to finish up. So I don't know if reinvention is something that's really going to be on his mind. But that's, you know, it's something worthwhile asking if he's maybe going to stylistically change. But just knowing how effective his weapons would be, I don't see him giving up on those weapons just yet. Maybe as the year goes on, you know, become more interested in thumbing it with the changeup. But I would suspect that his plan is to come in and be Clayton Kershaw, not his plan is to come in and try and be someone else.
Do you expect him to be the Claw, like Baseball Reference refers to him as?
Yeah, I don't know where that nickname came from. I don't totally get that. No one calls him the Claw except for you. Is that correct?
I have floated it out there a couple of times, and he growled at me.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he loves it.
Yeah. I don't recommend doing that the first day of spring training, Andy.
Hey, Claw, good to see you again, pal.
Andy McCullough from the LA Times is our guest. I can't let you go without asking you the obligatory Yasiel Puig question. It feels like the Dodgers are in the same spot with Puig as they were a year ago. So what's the temperature as far as where the front office and Dave Roberts feel about him going into camp?
I actually don't think they're in the same situation they were a year ago. I think last year they were coming in expecting him to be the regular right fielder. And I think right now he's a part-time player, and he needs to earn at-bats otherwise. I mean, I know, you know, we don't know what Andrew Tolles is going to be. I guess we don't know if Andrew Tolles is going to be the guy who, like, hit 300 or the guy who looked a little lost at times, you know, as he was a little more exposed to big league pitching. But we know who Andre Ethier is, and they say Andre Ethier is going to be healthy. And when Andre Ethier is healthy, he's a better hitter than Yasiel Puig. So I'm not sure why, you know, if Tolles is the guy he showed he can be, and Andre Ethier is Andre Ethier, I'm not sure why Puig is starting against right-handed pitchers.
Yeah, it seems like they want to give him every opportunity to be that everyday guy.
Sure, I mean, but he's got to hit his way into that, and that's, you know, that means he's got to show he can hit velocity. He's got to show he can hit righties. He's got to show that, you know, he can do things that have really troubled him in recent years. And, you know, he had a nice bounce-back month in that September when he came back from the minors. But he was playing almost exclusively against lefties. You know, he was not forced to, you know, face right-handed pitchers. And they've got 2 corner outfielders who, and again, a lot depends on, you know, Ethier's health and Tolles. You know, we don't know what Tolles is going to be just yet. But if those guys play up to the level they've shown before, they're better options in the corner. So Puig is a part-time player unless he's tearing the cover off the ball. And so it creates a healthy competition, I think, but it also creates for the Dodgers. I mean, they're not relying on this guy in the way that they might have been in years past. You know, he's going to be asked to be a contributor. He's not going to be asked to be the number 3 hitter.
That's Andy McCullough from the LA Times. I appreciate you taking the time out on the eve of pitchers and catchers reporting to Camelback Ranch, Andy. And I guess that's a little taste of the podcast that you and Pedro Mora do on LATimes.com.
Yeah, it's a great podcast for people who hate their life.
Perfect. I'll tune in.
You don't hate your life. You love your life.
I know. I do love.
You don't have to work. You get to stay home. You don't go to spring training. You're great.
I know. I was just doing that to make you feel better, to make you feel like I hate my life when I really do love my life.
You're the luckiest guy in town.
It's talking to you and getting to hang out with you for 162. It only gets better.
What could be better?
Andy, thanks a lot, and I'll see you out there next Monday.
Anytime, David. I'll see you soon.
Andy McCullough from the L.A. Times. You could follow Andy at McCullough Times. He's a fun follow, not just for baseball news. He has a very eclectic music taste and loves wrestling. So if you love baseball, very emo, eclectic, not popular music, and wrestling, Andy is the guy you want to follow at McCullough Times. And he's excited. He's a big baseball fan. He tries to downplay it and has a lot of knowledge about the game. So it was great to have him on, and it will be great to read him for 162 games, plus hopefully an NLCS and World Series run for the Dodgers. When we continue here on Nissan Dodger Talk, we will check in with Dodger pitching coach Rick Honeycutt to get the latest on what's going on with the pitchers that will be reporting to Camelback Ranch tomorrow on AM 570 LA Sports. This is Nissan Dodger Talk. David Vassay with you until 9 o'clock tonight on the eve of Dodgers pitchers and catchers reporting to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. The Dodger pitchers and catchers will commence spring training with the first workouts the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow, the pitchers and catchers come in, kind of get the physicals going, get the game plan for what they want to do, get with Rick Honeycutt, and also maybe even Oral Hershiser, who will be in uniform for the Dodgers the first 3 weeks of camp, assisting Rick Honeycutt with some of the pitchers. In case you missed it, Oral Hershiser actually broke the news himself last week on Sportsnet LA with John Hartung that he will be an instructor with the Dodgers in spring training for the first 3 weeks. It's not going to be a ceremonial position. He's actually going to be hands-on with some of the pitchers there in camp, and it makes sense now that we find out, because of Ken Gernick's story on Dodgers.com, that Greg Maddux is actually going to devote more time to UNLV baseball. So they had an opening, and Rick Honeycutt extended the olive branch to Oral Hershiser. Oral obviously has a lot of pitching knowledge, spending 4 years with the Texas Rangers as their pitching coach. So it will be great to see number 55 back in uniform at Camelback Ranch. And I've said it before, that's what makes the Dodgers great, is bringing back the great players as instructors. That's what happened during Oral's career. Guys like Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale, Ron Paranoski, Roy Campanella, and the list goes on and on. Johnny Padres, Claude Osteen, all those guys were in Vero Beach after their playing days were done, imparting some of the knowledge that Oral has right now as far as pitching mechanics go, and as Rick Honeycutt has as well. So it's just being passed forward, and it's a great decision by the Dodgers to have Oral Hershiser in camp, the 1988 Cy Young Award winner, and it'll be great to see everybody out there. No more important than number 22, Clayton Kershaw, and we'll ask Rick Honeycutt about how he's feeling, because we had a chance to catch up with the Dodger pitching coach last week, and he will join us in a moment, but it's a great time. It's a great time to be a Dodger fan because this team is loaded going into spring training. I felt the 2013 team was the best talented team of these four division champions, but I believe this one has a chance to be the most talented if they stay healthy. So it'll be interesting and a fun season if you're a Dodger fan. And spring training tickets are available. You could go to Dodgers.com to get those tickets and also your regular season tickets as well. All right. Right now, it's time to hear our conversation with Dodger pitching coach Rick Honeycutt. Had a chance to talk to him and ask him his plans for the Dodgers pitchers as they report to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona.
Happy New Year, Dave.
Happy New Year, Rick. And I know it's a Happy New Year for you because you get two of your free agent pitchers coming back. Obviously, you've had a longer history with Kenley Jansen. Your thoughts on getting your big closer back?
That was huge. That was sweat and bullets there during the free agent time. And, of course, hearing, just like everybody else, I was not privy of the day-to-day. I was extremely happy. And when Kenley signed, gave him a call, was very happy. Told him I was proud of him and happy for him, but very happy that he's going to be in a Dodger uniform for the next 4 years.
I mentioned this is your 17th overall season back in the organization. You started at the very bottom as far as working with minor league players in 2001 and were part of the transformation of Kenley Jansen. When you put in that much effort and time to see a player turn into what Kenley has turned into, how much do you have emotionally invested in that process?
Well, I mean, just feel for the young man. I mean, what he's gone through, the time and effort for the organization, but I like all of our pitchers, but when they come through our system, and especially someone like Kenley that made a position change, and, you know, all the people in the organization that helped him. I mean, Charlie Huff was very instrumental. Kenny Howe was extremely instrumental. Chuck Krim, I mean, everybody that's touched. And what I love about Kenley is, you know, very sincere, very hardworking young man, and he just, to me, just keeps getting better. And I thought it would have been bad with him, you know, on one side with him so unselfish during the playoffs and what he did in Washington that night, just showing, you know, how much he cared for the team and the unselfishness that he showed. You know, I was just really happy that the Dodgers, you know, were able to work out something with him.
You bring up that Game 5 in Washington of the NLDS. When you talk about what Kenley did and how unselfish he was, but then also to piggyback on what Kershaw did considering the circumstances, you've been around a long time in this game, Rick. Have you seen two guys in the modern day be as unselfish when they went out of their comfort zone?
Well, that was a special night. I mean, it was a do-or-die night for us. But, I mean, again, I think it showed the character of our ball club, you know, the willingness to do whatever it takes to win. And took all the, you know, everybody took the labels off of themselves and just, you know, laid it out on the field. And that's all you can ask for. And I think that spoke volumes for our club last year. You know, and also for Dave Roberts and his leadership to, you know, command that respect and for our guys to just be willing to do whatever. I mean, I was very, very, very happy and proud of our guys.
Rick Honeycutt, Dodgers pitching coach, is our guest. The other free agent pitcher you retained was Rich Hill. Was there anything that surprised you about Rich Hill that you didn't know about before he was pitching for you in the Dodger uniform?
Well, you know, Rich has had such a up and down, you know, career and things for him. I mean, just extremely was happy, you know, when they made the deal. It was happy when he was able to finally get to pitch for us, and he showed, you know, how good he is. You know, persevere like he has over so many different things. I remember Rich when he kind of came up with the Cubs, watching him, and I liked him then. You know, there's a lot of tough things that you battle, the demons and everything else to go with it besides injuries and things like that. But, you know, extremely happy for him. You know, Dave called me when they finally worked out the deal and said he was crying like a baby that, you know, getting that type of deal and that, you know, the Dodgers were willing to step up. So, again, extremely happy for him and his family, and been talking to him all winter. He feels good. He feels great. And I think he's going to keep it going. I mean, he's got great stuff. Now we got to just keep his finger from stopping him.
Yeah, you got to shrink wrap that thing in spring training, right, honey?
Well, I'm sure our medical staff will definitely be on top of that all year to help him keep that finger from having to go through what he did last year.
Speaking of the medical staff, honey, I know you saw way too many of their reports last year, considering that you had to use 15 different starting pitchers. But as far as Clayton Kershaw goes this season, considering what he went through with the back last year, will there be anything different for him as far as his spring training routine or regimen? And with the World Baseball Classic, how does that factor in his preparation for the season?
You know, talking with Kirsch, he feels great. You know, I've been in touch with all the guys and where they're at and going over the program and suggestions of what they may want to go into it, because we do have, you know, extra week of workouts this year. So, but Kirsch's, he's been great. We've talked about the schedule, and he still wants to make all the starts in camp, and we just may go a little bit slower since we have the extra week. But at the same time, you know, be very conscious that he feels great, and hopefully, you know, we have the back issue behind us now.
When you talk about going slower with a pitcher in spring training, honey, what does that mean? Does that mean not going full out on the mound, or how do you slow that down?
No, I mean, they'll still be getting on the mound, but the days in between, even their pins, I mean, in the past, we've had to go pretty fast because spring training is shorter and the games get there quicker. But, you know, guys are still going to be pitching in the games, but we're going to have the ability to stretch them out. I'm trying to get the guys into their five-day rotation as quick as possible so they'll have that routine set up quicker, also give them, you know, more rest earlier in camp. Got the ability to have two, the way I have it set up, hopefully with no rain outs. I know it don't usually rain in Arizona, but you'd be surprised, here in the last 4 or 5 years there has been some rain, and I've actually, in the middle of camp to the latter part of camp, have 6 days for, you know, all the starters so that we can stretch, give them an extra day rest in the middle of camp. So I think the process is still the same. It's just maybe not as many times on, you know, on the mound, maybe an extra day rest between pins and that sort of thing early on.
Dodger pitching coach Rick Honeycutt is our guest. And a few weeks ago, honey, Dave Roberts had alluded to the fact you guys are considering possibly holding Julio Urías back for an extended spring training. How would that benefit him, and how does that benefit the ball club?
Well, I mean, we're still in that phase where you got to be smart with Julio being 20 years old and the number of innings that he's accumulated so far in his career. And, you know, it was a pretty big jump for him last year, but I felt like that he handled it extremely well. And there's going to be a number that we shoot for, you know, for the start of this year to try to keep him in. And it's no different than pretty much what we did with Clayton earlier in his career. But Clayton had logged more innings leading up to before he got to the big leagues than what Julio did. So there's that fine line of not jumping someone too many innings from year to year. And I think that's extremely smart, and it's viable, and we have to be conscious of that. So there's a lot of different thoughts about how to do that, but we'll just have to everybody just have to wait and see how the best way to do it. But again, we saw at the end of the season trying to preserve him, and it's tough trying to just get him, you know, an inning or two here or there out of the bullpen, and then you turn around and need him to, you know, make a start in the postseason. And I thought he was great, but at the same time, it just wasn't maybe at the same level that he had been, you know, previous, you know, 3 to 4 weeks earlier than that. So it's a tough balancing act right there.
Is the ideal situation this year to keep him just as a starting pitcher rather than bringing him out of the bullpen?
Well, I think for him, I think it definitely. I mean, he's proven that he made those adjustments and has proven himself that he's got, you know, the real opportunity to be a really, really, you know, a great pitcher, and we have him for, you know, under control for a while. So we got to be very smart, and I would think that would be best for him. But at the same time, I mean, there may be a couple times in the course of the season or during whenever there is an off day or whatever, maybe we can, you know, skip that start or whatever to give him a little bit of blow. And so anyway, those are things that will be discussing and already been discussing, and we'll continue to have those discussions to try to figure out what's best for him and what's best for the ball club.
And I guess the best part of all of this is that your starting pitchers go 10 deep, and a couple of those guys, your veterans, Scott Kazmir and Brandon McCarthy, are looking to bounce back. I saw what Kazmir said at FanFest, that he's coming into camp with a chip on his shoulder, and as a pitching coach, I'm sure you like hearing that.
Yeah, Kaz and Mac are both extremely, I think, poised to have those bounce back years like you're talking about. I think, you know, they're obviously Mac coming off injury, but Kaz, you know, was so good there in the middle of the season and then started having different issues that really affected his abilities. And, you know, he's got a lot of pride and he's still a good major league pitcher. So I think he's talking with him. He's really been working hard. He's been off the mound, and I think he definitely, you know, is coming in to prove that he's, you know, still has everything that he wants and being able to compete at the level that he expects that he should be competing at.
Dodger pitching coach Rick Honeycutt is our guest. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but there's a lot to talk about, Honey. What do you like about Sergio Romo watching him pitch for the Giants?
Well, Sergio, you know, having the postseason experience, being in a closer role, setup role, pretty much, you know, I think Serge is, you know, one of those guys that you see and I don't like to use the word overachiever, but he is the type of guy that he figures out how to get people out. He's able to do it in key situations, and, you know, he just has that knack, that mindset and confidence that he can make the pitches when he has to, and he's proven that over and over. I mean, you look at what he's been able to do over, you know, his time with the Giants and you know, going to winning three World Series and him being a major part of each one of those. So I think it's really advantageous for us. It gives us another veteran person in the pen that we can hopefully, you know, put those, be in those pressure situations and expect, you know, really positive results. So I never did like him when he was on the other side, but now I love him if he's going to be in a Dodger uniform.
Yeah, you love that slider against righties.
Well, you know, when you have a pitch that everybody knows that you're going to throw them and still have the success that he's had, it's pretty dang good. And he's got a really, really good one, and he knows how to use it, and he's extremely good at what he does.
All right, before I let you go, Major League Baseball is considering raising the strike zone above the kneecap. As a former pitcher and a pitching coach, I know you don't want to see that. And how does it make sense that that would create more offense? Wouldn't it create more hitters walking instead of hitting?
Well, you know, unfortunately, that area has always been, for me, is a stumbling block. Because it's in the perception of whoever's behind the plate that night. It's no different than years ago when they said, okay, we're going to at least start calling the ball at the belly button. That lasted about 3 days in spring training. We see so many pitches, and, I mean, it's an area of concern when you start trying to move the strike zone around. I mean, it's something that you have to continually battle with, and you just won't consistency, whoever's back there. So if they're going to try that, you know, we just have to see how it goes. But that's an extremely tough call for them. I mean, the bottom of the zone has always been a tough call. You think the ball that's up at the belt would be very easy to call, but it's not easy to call. And like I said, a few years ago, they said, oh, we're going to go to the right by the book and call it from the, you know, the letters down to the, you know, top of the kneecap. And it just continues to be that inconsistency there. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. Like you said, you know, what makes them think that that is solving the other issues? To me, it would be these guys, when the ancient years when I played, it was like guys went up there, and if they got two strikes, they shortened their swing and they made contact. Guys are still, you know, striking out way too much more than what they did back in the day. And I think that's what they need to go back to, is these guys being willing to hit the ball up the middle or the other way when they have two strikes instead of, you know, swinging so hard.
Yeah, talking to guys that played in your era, striking out 100 times was unacceptable.
It was funny when Donnie was here. I mean, I think in his MVP year, I think he walked, forget what his walks were, but I think he only had 42 strikeouts and playing in 160 games or whatever he played in. That was, you know, over 600 at bats. That was what told who was a good hitter, not having 200 strikeouts or 180 strikeouts like a Dave Kingman, even though he could hit 30 plus home runs. But, you know, Rob Deere, go back, you know, that were setting the records with strikeouts back then. You saw guys that would hit 300, you know, they would take their walks, but at the same time, they put the ball in play.
Honey, you might have 2,500 strikeouts if you were pitching today.
No, I was never.
With these guys, you might have been. With your sidearm, your submarine, the way you were coming at them, you know, they would be looking for that 95 heat, but you'd be throwing that Bugs Bunny stuff at them.
I'm way past that time of thinking about that day.
I posted that 1985 baseball card of yours, that beautiful delivery, so we haven't forgotten.
Well, you know, those were the days, good memories, but I'm just right now I'm more concerned about the 30 guys I'm going to have in camp and making sure that we can keep these guys, you know, we didn't even talk about Ryu and Wood and Stripling and Stewart and, you know, Maeda. I mean, it's just we've got the makings of a great staff, and we just got to get these guys in there back healthy and throwing the way that they can.
Yeah, are you buying the Ryu talk that he's healthy and ready to go day one?
Well, I have seen film of him, of his bullpens that he's been throwing, and talked with him three times. So he feels good. You know, I think it's, again, though, with not – pitching very much in the last 2 years, we got to get him out there back in the action, get him back in the saddle and see how he responds, but at the same time being smart with him so that hopefully that he can get back to close to the pitcher that he was, and hopefully the arm and the shoulder respond so that he can be there, because he's he would be it would be a huge lift for our ball club if we can get him back.
Yeah, he was really good those first 2 years. Honey, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it. And I will see you out there February 19th. So just to warn you so you know when I'm coming.
Okay, that's a good warning. I'll have to mark that date down.
You can lock the doors.
No, never on you, Dave.
Honey, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
That was Dodger pitching coach Rick Honeycutt, who joined us last week. A very fitting conversation to hear again, since Dodgers pitchers and catchers reporting tomorrow, and their first workout is the day after tomorrow, and Sergio Romo will be in camp for the Dodgers, and also Franklin Gutierrez and Chase Utley will be there as well. So like I mentioned before the interview, this is the most talented Dodger team since 2013. That'll do it for Nissan Dodger Talk. We'll be back with you on Thursday night at 7 o'clock, so thanks to Ronnie Fascio for his help. Thanks to Andy McCullough from the LA Times checking in live from Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. And thanks, as always, to Dodger pitching coach Rick Honeycutt. Coming up next, Fox Sports Radio. Have a great night, everybody. See ya.